We want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church podcast with Pastor Terry Bailey. This podcast can be found on iTunes by searching for Terry Bailey Ministries. Right now, let's get to Pastor Terry's insightful message.
Last week, in the introduction to the sermon, I told a story about a time that I ordered a piece of raisin pie at a diner and was entirely disappointed by what they called raisin pie. And a kind person who was present to hear the sermon brought me two slices of really good raisin pie this week. Really good. Much, much better than the disappointing piece of raisin pie that I had mentioned. So I thought this morning I would talk for a minute about cherry pie. And just see where this leads. I will mention only two things. One, really good cherry pie has lots of butter, a sprinkle of cinnamon, and some almond extract, just saying that. And second, it was a person from the 8 o'clock service who brought me the raisin pie, and you 10-15ers don't want to be outdone, right? By the So that's all I have to say about that. Some years ago, long enough, Andrew, that Sarah was in school and you were home with me when we were there in Indianapolis, and I had you and Caleb, and we had gone out and bought groceries for the week. And I don't know if you remember these days even, but I always took you guys out to Racks or McDonald's or somewhere after we bought groceries. And we were in line behind this lady who also had two kids, but they were younger, a little barely toddler clinging to one hand and a baby that she was holding in arms, and she was working to get her order completed, trying to keep that little one corralled and this one held and getting drinks, and she got her tray filled up, and I said to the boy, I said, just wait here a second, and I said to the lady, let me help you with that tray, and I carried her tray to the table for her. The boys did not wait like I told them. They followed me, so we lost our place in line and had to go back around and through, but they followed me over to the table, and I set the tray down, and the lady said, thank you, and I said, no problem, and started back up to make our order, and Andrew paused to say to this lady, whom we had never seen before and have never seen since, he said, I think my dad is falling in love with you. I'm sorry, ma'am, I'm sorry. Honest, we just... And then we went and got our food. But it's a pretty normal response when you see someone who is even just momentarily overburdened that you want to help them. Let me carry that for you. In the old days, I would carry people's groceries out to the car for them and hold it while they open their trunk and get it in. These days, you would be guarded with extreme suspicion, probably a robber or pervert of some sort, and they'd be holding a can of mace while they were unlocking the trunk. But used to, that was pretty normal business. If somebody was heavily burdened, you help them. If you could, you bore part of that burden for them. And there's a special application of this thought to our faith walk. Bear one another's burden. Now, I'm going to spend more time kind of setting up the context and resolving a few issues, and just a few minutes actually preaching this sermon, so bear with me here as we try to set the context. First, in Galatians, Paul was talking to people about other people in the congregation. This is a standard for conduct within the family of faith, within the house of God. That does not mean that we are never to be kind or helpful to people who are outsiders, or even non-believers. Of course, we are. That's just a different issue. And many things that have an appropriate place in the world for Christians still must begin within the household of God. If in this place where we call ourselves brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ, we do not have a special and sanctified relationship with each other, in this place, then we're not doing it right. And we aren't going to be equipped for whatever else it is that we need to do in the world until we start doing it right in here. So first thing, it is the context of our relationship to each other within the congregation. Second, it is not just benevolence. And I will say for this congregation, in all the years that I've been here, we got benevolence down pretty good. If somebody had a fire in their house tonight, everybody would be on board to help them. If someone had a medical emergency, the ladies would organize to get food taken over to the house for however long it was necessary. If leaves needed raked or grass need mowed, those things would happen. We're pretty good at benevolence where unfortunate circumstances confront somebody. But that's not the context here. If you read that first verse carefully, it says, when somebody is caught in a trespass, when somebody within your household of faith is caught in a sin, this is the occasion on which we need to bear one another's burdens. Now, I want to note here that we hear that word caught in a sin and we usually draw exactly the wrong mental picture. It's like, ha-ha, I saw that! You're busted! I'm the morality police. If you see me prowling around your house looking in the windows, I'm not casing the joint, I'm just making sure you're behaving okay. All right. Not what Paul is talking about. This caught in a trespass or sin business harks back to earlier Old Testament imagery. It's not that I caught you doing something. It's that you were doing something because Satan caught you like a bird in a snare. You were trapped. And now you are held by that trap. You are caught in your trespass. And the longer that situation remains, the more loops and bindings Satan will weave around you until what may have been a slip to start with becomes a stronghold that can only be broken down by drastic measures. We're not supposed to let that happen. And Paul mixes his metaphors, but that's a very Paul kind of thing to do. We have the trap and we have the burden. And you need to understand that sin is a burden, a dead weight that piles up on your back and handicaps you and keeps you from going where you ought to go, being how you ought to be, accomplishing what you might accomplish in the kingdom. This is our concern. Not that I caught you doing something and need to pile shame on you, which would only be adding to your burden. But Satan caught you. And you are caught. Satan piles these burdens on your back. And it should be our aim in the congregation to restore someone who has fallen into these circumstances. Restore, of course. Find someone in weakness and restore them to strength. Find someone in corruption and restore them to purity. Find someone in sin and restore them to righteousness, of course, but primarily to find someone in bondage and restore them to freedom. To find someone who is burdened and restore them to ease and to capability. This is the thought. Our Christian walk, it is not for nothing that it is called a walk, a journey, a trip. Movement from where we are to where we're going. And the Bible was written in the days before you could rent a U-Haul. But that's okay because the kind of on-foot journey that they're talking about fits our situation better. We are traveling through the world and the things of the world, all under the sway of Satan, so easily become the burdens that weigh us down. Just to get started, materialism, attachment, undue attachment to material things, to wealth, is a sin in which we get caught. Materialism snares us, binds us, weighs us down, but so does sexual sin. And so do many other sins that you could mention. And it is a journey, and it's like this. I say to myself, I'm setting out to walk to California, walking to California, guys, but I really need to take this anvil with me. And this old truck transmission, I need that. And my 17-foot canoe, gotta have that. So I'm walking to California with my anvil, my old truck transmission, and my 17-foot canoe. What are the odds that I will make it to California? Even if I were to devise a dolly for the canoe and try to pile the anvil and the transmission into it, I have burdened myself almost beyond the bare possibility of ever reaching the destination. And the question is, what's more important to me? This stuff which Satan wants to bind around my neck, or that place that Jesus Christ has set me free to enter? It's a snare. It's a trap. It's a ball and chain. The sins that bind us and prevent us from making progress. Now, one other little housekeeping thing I need to do, and I promise in just a minute I'm going to preach the sermon. But it won't take me long, so don't panic. Some people think they see a conflict, a contradiction here, because it says in verse 2, bear one another's burdens. But when you get down to verse 5, it says, for each one will bear his own. And you may have a different word there, load or burden, because the words are slightly different, but they're not very different, the words that Paul uses. So which is it, Paul? Are we bearing one another's burdens? Or is each of us responsible for our own freight? It seems to us that it needs to be one or the other, and I agree, it needs to be one or the other. So which is Paul recommending? Well, I'm going to back up now and explain to you the whole context of the book of Galatians. If you go back to chapter 1 and you start reading, you see that the book of Galatians centers around a single idea: trading grace for the law is a bad deal. Paul says, who has bewitched you people that you are so foolish as to leave off grace and go back to the law? Who could possibly persuade you to do something so stupid, counterproductive, harmful to you? And that idea is carried through the book, and it's still going on here. Paul recognizes that when he says we must bear one another's burdens when someone is caught in a trespass, that some people are going to say, hey, it's not my problem. I'm living righteous. I'm living free. It's not my fault you dived into the septic pool. Why should I have to wade in and fish you out? And so Paul says, you know, you might want to be careful because you could be the next person pulled in. You can fall too. And if it comes down to this, well, I'm okay and they're not and that's their fault. Understand that that's the old system. Yes, we can go back to that. We can go back to me boasting about my superior keeping of the law as compared to your obviously inferior keeping of the law. We can do that. But in that system, you know who bears your burden? You do. In that system, no one can relieve you of one lousy ounce of the weight that you have allowed to be piled on your shoulders. You're on your own, pal. And if you don't catch that tone in what Paul is saying, you will not understand the passage. He's telling you the downside of looking at a burdened person and saying, not my problem, that's their own fault. They got themselves into it. Let them get themselves out of it. Ready to preach. Bear one another's burden. What does it mean? Well, it could mean a million things, but I'll give just a few examples. And if I give you the few examples, the rest you'll be able to imagine for yourself, I think. Bear one another's burdens. It means maybe I'm the guy that you can call even if it's after midnight. That's okay when the easy allure to internet pornography is pulling on your soul like a magnet. You call me because I'll give up an hour's sleep or more if necessary to talk with you, pray with you, come meet you, go out for a drink, by which I mean Diet Coke, just clarifying. No point trading one problem for another. And I'll be that guy. I will stand alongside you and I will shoulder as much of your load as I can until the crisis is past. Maybe it means you are the person who will babysit that other couple's kids so they can go to their counseling session and work on excising the evil snare that is strangling their marriage. It may be past counseling. You will continue to babysit their kids so they can go out and work on the solutions that have arisen in the counseling session. Maybe you are the person who will give up a free evening every once in a while because it means standing beside a person who has been caught in a trespass, bearing that little bit of their burden. Maybe you are the person who will come and sit down with me and teach me sound biblical financial practices to help me get on the road out of the economic mess that materialism has led me to create in my life. Maybe any of us can be one of those people and help bear the burden of a brother or sister who has been caught in trespass and loaded down with weight that prevents them from continuing on their faith walk. Now there arises a second objection beyond the first one that Paul dealt with, me thinking that I'm okay and you're not, so you ship your own freight. Second objection is this: well, that sounds like a lot of trouble. That's also very inconvenient. This comes to me at a cost in time and effort and maybe money. Well, yes, it does. So why should we incur such costs? I will ask you a question. What is the worth of a soul saved? Place a value on it. If everything that we say we believe about eternity and eternal consequences, if we really believe those things that we say that we believe about eternity, is a soul saved worth the sacrifice of a few hours sleep? Is it? Is it worth giving up a free evening now and then? Is it? Is it worth a little time and aggravation working with somebody who has been a little blind and hard-headed on an important spiritual subject? Is it? If it isn't worth that much, then it's not worth much, is it? But the fact is, a soul saved is the single most precious commodity in creation. And that's why God invests in them so heavily. And why we ought to follow His lead. Paul makes one more statement. At the end of the day, this whole business, bearing one another's burdens, this is the law of Christ. Think about it a minute. If ever anybody was free from the hurt and stain of the sinful world, it was Christ in glory. But He came down here and He bore my burden. The burden of my sin and condemnation, He bore it entirely. And He bore it at a cost greater than anything I've mentioned yet this morning. This is the law of Christ. Never mind the law of Moses and whatever loopholes it may present us. This is the law of Christ, that we should be like Him who bore our burdens. And if we refuse to bear one another's burdens, how like Him are we really? Well, not much. And what value do we place on a soul saved? And again, the answer would be not much. We can play the guilt and shame game and add to each other's burdens. We can play the, hey, keep a stiff upper lip and pretend you're okay even when you're not game, and add to one another's burdens. Or we can bear one another's burdens. I'll say two things and I'll quit. One, I hope that if you are so burdened, so caught at this point or in any point in your life, that you would find in me and in this congregation the people who will help bear those burdens. And I hope that you would have no hesitation to make it known to me if I didn't see it on my own, so that some of us can step in alongside you and start easing that weight. And second, the very first thing about coming to Jesus Christ is this. It is an opportunity to lay your burdens down.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our faithful listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church podcast. You can find out more about the church by visiting our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. That's www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.